This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullion Haw starts now.
What did you make of the Bears' NFLPA report card? What do you think Matt Eberflus thought of it? Did Eberflus bring down their score? Did he deserve his F in last place in the entire NFL, despite that the Bears graded 14th among the top half of the league overall?
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, that was apparently done before he was fired. They had... The NFLPA had already done the kind of report card. They grade everything, all the things in the building. Honestly, I'm not making a joke, I thought that their food was better than the players. I used to know the guy that cooked there. He was a good man, and I hope it's not the same dude because, boy, they didn't like the food. Huh? I think that the area got like a thumbs up, but everything else about it they didn't like. I thought it was really good for ownership. There was a positive vibe about George McCaskey and the McCaskey family and what they're trying to do. But Eberflus was taken down, and it was tough to see that score. I don't know that he deserved an F. To be last among coaches in the league has got to damage you a little bit, but probably drag down the whole grade. Probably did. Makes me wonder how much we care about the players, frankly, if they lay the coach out to dry.
There's no doubt that the F dragged the grade down. I think what's more interesting, just going back to Eberflus for a second, is the fact that he got hired as quickly as he did by the team that he was hired by. I mean, there's some good defensive players on that Cowboys roster. And again, I think at the end of the day, I think everybody would agree, may not want to admit it, but that Eberflus can call a defense in-game.
No question.
He can do that. What I was most surprised about...
Can't call a timeout correctly.
Can't call a timeout. Supposedly did not like the advice that was given to him and executing the advice given to him. The fact that ownership received an A. I mean, for every text message and for every phone call that we get, sell the Bears, sell the Bears, sell the Bears, ownership. I mean, ownership got an A. The players think the owners did a good job, and they got an A. That to me was the most surprising thing of this list.
That's the headline. This was a poll of Bears players, not Bears fans, because it wouldn't be that way if you had Bears fans polled. I don't know about this.
What grade would the players get if the fans were polled?
About the players?
I'm just saying.
How many of them need to go? You have an organization that invested $100 million in Hallis Hall renovations. The weight room is like your finest dining room you could go to. It's clean, it's bright, it's airy, it's beautiful. This facility, I can't imagine a better workplace. Ownership gets an A because they've done everything in their power. All these other things sound a little bit like gripes.
Yeah.
These players, the cap has gone up 2 years in a row by $51 million. These players are paid well. I know there's a lot of things about football that you have to, you know, you can complain about, but they're living a pretty good life. All these things sound like petty complaints. My goodness, Matt Eberflus, kick a guy while he's down. Oh. He didn't listen to the players. He had eight captains, a leadership council, and they still staged a mutiny. So who are we pointing a finger at here? This is entertaining. It's good to talk about, but really, I mean, 14th is about right.
Especially, is it Miami won 2 years running?
Congratulations. Miami? You get January off. They're not in the playoffs.
No, what's the value?
So what does that
winning?
Mean? Number one, mythical title.
Weren't the Chiefs like dead last a year ago?
They were dead last a year ago. They won the Super Bowl. Yeah, they were 31st this year. They went back. So how bad
31st?
Could it be?
Wow.
There's no question.
What did you think of Ben Johnson telling Barstool in an interview that he could squat 405 pounds?
You know, I go ass to ankles.
Okay.
And so I probably could get 405 right now.
Whoa.
That's pretty good.
How many NFL coaches can do that, and do you like Johnson's macho side?
It was a surprise. Definitely did not expect that to be on the bingo card this week. Vrabel probably could. Sean McDermott, could he go 405? Are we good? Tomlin? How many? I'd say.
How many coaches use the term ass to ankle?
That's a better question. I'm telling you, we like the guy talking a lot. He's talking a lot. He's still talking. What's he going to talk about today? His fastest mile ever?
Could that McDaniels down in Miami, think he could squat that?
No, he's too busy making sure the workplace is good environment.
Making sure the food tastes good.
And the food tastes good. Chef Mike McDaniels. Still cooking. This was an entertaining little sidelight to Combine Week, but it got you thinking, how many other coaches? I don't know. Is he the strongest coach in the league?
Smartest
and the strongest. Bob Bears got a bargain. I bet you LaFleur can't. I bet you Matt LaFleur can't do 405.
The flower wouldn't.
Does Andy Reid weigh 405? I mean, I just say, but he said to answer the question that I had, I think right now I could do 405. And now when you say ass to ankle, that means he's putting his tush on the floor. Okay, yeah. Not even going, he's going way below level. Because that was the thing. Oh, you know, back in our barbaric weightlifting days, we actually wore like a level on our thigh. When it beeped, you could go up. When we were doing like weightlifting contests back in the day, you actually wore like a garter with a beeper on it. And when it beeped, you went up. Otherwise, it was like not an official weight.
I feel like I'm at like a Republican political convention the way you're playing this music in the background.
Well, he said macho. I mean, that was
I love it.
He said
I love
macho.
It. I'm all for
all
it.
I can say and wonder is, I mean, he heard this too, is Ben Johnson, Dan Campbell, 6 a.m. in Detroit, working out in the Lions weight room.
I guarantee he can go over 405, yeah. Especially after he's all, you know.
He's the guy.
Gathered up.
Yeah, he's the strongest, I think.
Yeah. That was great. Remember the old, when Jesse Ventura was the governor of Minnesota, our governor can beat up your governor.
That was fun.
Our coach could probably run a QB sneak at the goal line. He wouldn't need much of a tush-push.
What about
it's
Kyle Shanahan?
Lower body power.
He's a stud.
Kyle Shanahan is
more of a treadmill guy, I'm thinking. More of an elliptical.
Yeah, elliptical. I like that. That would be it.
Not a big elliptical guy.
But the point is, it's not about brawn or power.
No, it's not.
Which this implies. That's pretty good. Ask the ankles, best coach in the league.
It's a good quote.
Yeah, it's a good question.
With ESPN reporting overnight that Penn State edge rusher Abdul Carter might need foot surgery, would you take him number one overall? Would you take him at number 10 if he drops to the Bears? How tough of a dilemma is this?
I am deflated quite a bit by this, to be honest with you. You know, we were talking before the combine started, and I believe he was the guy you had on your Vontae Mack list, right?
Yes.
The name you wrote down as
Abdul-Carter, no matter what.
Abdul-Carter, no matter what. And you know, he's had an unbelievable career. He's a really good player. I hate hearing stuff like that. A lot of times, it's not so much what the injury is or the illness or what happens to someone. It's how they can deal with it that matters. But you don't want to take a chance. We're talking about the Bears. Will they get a chance to throw $22 million at Trey Smith? You know, he had issues with coming into the draft. He ended up falling pretty far in the draft.
That's a good point.
And you see guys that fall in a draft and have great careers, but it will stop teams from investing high. So I believe it will impact his status in the draft. You know, they have the combine, and then right before the draft, they have what's called the combine recheck, where guys that have issues will go back and they'll see where they are right before they go on the board. But you know, when you talk about stress fracture, when you talk about any kind of hidden injury, illness, that is why guys fall. The only reason people always wonder about, oh, what happened? Did he take a drug? Ooh, did he fail the character? No, it's mainly the medicals that make people fall in drafts. So I worry that it's cost him a lot of money. That's all. Hopefully he gets through it.
If the Google machine is right, it's a 6 to 8 week injury.
It's a 6 to 8 week surgery.
Surgery?
Yeah, he would have to have surgery, and then it would be six to 8 weeks.
Recovery time.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I just said.
But keep going. Different. I'm saying surgery. It means he has an issue. It means he had to have something fixed before he plays. And surgery before play, no good.
He's already played. Molly would never sign a pitcher who had Tommy John. You know how many people have surgeries?
I never said that.
I didn't, but you just said I said something that I didn't say. I'm just saying,
Why are we finishing each other's sentences and arguing about this?
Well, that's what the Pick Six is all about, apparently. I would run the card up there if I were the Bears. There's no shot. I mean, maybe he doesn't go number one. I get that. I mean, maybe the Cleveland Browns, maybe if he falls to two, okay, now all of a sudden I will trade the guy who doesn't want to be here at the second. He's not, I mean, would he get past four? I think Mike Vrabel would be all in on Abdul-Carter. And if the Bears can get him, the Raiders, God, it screams Raiders. Abdul-Carter screams Raiders to me. Listen, this guy, it's not a big deal. It's news. We're all looking for a nugget. It's something. Maybe he doesn't go number one. I don't know that he was going number one in the first place. But this wouldn't scare me for the Bears. Listen, if the Bears can get him at 10, no problem. Let him sit the whole year. I don't care. But it's all a 6 to 8 week injury.
Let's add some information to the speculation. Adam Schefter reports option one for Abdul-Carter is to have the preemptive surgery, have a screw inserted in his right foot, and be expected back in 8 weeks. Let me repeat that for people who didn't hear it. Have a screw inserted in his right foot. Okay? Talking about the number one overall draft pick potentially. Option two, bypass the surgery, do the pro day, and prove to NFL teams he doesn't need it. While they wonder if he needs a screw inserted in his right foot. This is the guy who was the best player in the draft. This is news that is shocking.
Yep.
This is going to shake up the first round. I would be very cautious. You've got a lot of other choices. I love the player. You know I love the player. I don't love the risk. I think a team would have to be desperate to take him. Knowing what we know now, this is a fluid situation. More information will come. But based on the way it's reported, Schefter knows. It seems like this is a big deal because of what that implies. If you have a screw inserted in your foot, I know a lot of guys who probably could play through that and it never be an issue, but it's a risk. It's a ticking time bomb. I don't know if it's a good risk to take if you're the Bears at 10, if you're the Titans at 1, if you're anybody lower than in the top half of this draft. Somebody's going to get a heck of a player, and maybe this will never be an issue. But I went from writing down Abdul-Carter no matter what to adding one word to that. Avoid Abdul-Carter, no matter what.
Wow, Mr. David, that's good stuff. That's a fun. Both of you are out of your heads. It's really good that you are overly cautious, and he is just too aggressive. I think for me, the problem with this, if you just think about it from a Bears perspective, it's not whether you can get him, can he fall to you? It's that he's falling. That means that there's another player that will move up. It means that a team that was going to take a pass rusher, maybe now they want an offensive tackle. I'm not sure that you have a choice of whether or not you can take a guy because you need so much immediate help on the offensive line.
It's a great question.
That's the voice of Matt Shaw with Mully and Haw. And still iffy health-wise, how welcome was Justin Turner sounding willing to play third base and prepping to do so?
I've been taking a lot of ground balls at third, you know, just mainly to get my arm back in shape. And I played a lot more first base the last two seasons than I have over there. So just getting work in there. Like I said, stretching out my arm. Want to be comfortable over there in case something happens or I got to be over there.
What did you think of what Justin Turner just said? If he's got to be over there, he's going to get himself ready.
Team guy, consummate pro. The more he talks, the more I like. He definitely is a guy who can hit if he's in the lineup, regardless of his role. He can be coming off the bench. He could be your DH. He could be your everyday third baseman for a stretch. What Bruce told us yesterday about Matt Shaw not making the trip to Japan was just hard, cold reality smacking me in the face. And I think that's what you have to get used to. I don't know if Matt Shaw is back yet. Has he started yet? Where is Matt Shaw? He's in Arizona. Did he take ground balls yesterday? When's he going to be in the lineup? All I care about is that. But in the interim, if Justin Turner has to play third base, he sounds like he's willing to. The more he talks, the more everyone's going to like. But I don't like this development and what it means for Shaw.
Well, I think all eyes each day when you see the lineup card for the Cubs at spring training is going, like, who's on third? And you're going to want to see, like, seriously, like, who's on third?
I know.
Are we going to see Justin Turner in a game at third, or is this going to be on the backfields? And listen, in all seriousness, for a two-game stretch against the Dodgers, just for that little storyline, I think it's perfect. I'm fine with Justin Turner for two games in Japan against the Dodgers. Now, I don't want Justin Turner being there more than like about 10 games overall, or maybe more than five. But for two games, I could do that, especially against the Dodgers in Japan.
So,
like the story.
I don't want to put, you know, any rain on the parade here, but let me ask you this question. What if he gets no training camp? Then does he have to go to Iowa? I'm not kidding.
Yes.
When does he have to be in games? How do you get him ready for a Major League Baseball season if this is going to extend for a long time here? We're already saying scratch him for March 18th. Good God, that's a long way down the road, right? Isn't that a long time that you're not going to be able to be up and running and be able to play in a Major League game? So is there a date in anyone's mind, or is there a date that we could look up based on other players where he's got to start in the minor leagues just so he has enough camp there in real games to get himself ready for the major leagues? I'm just wondering if there, because you know what? He's plan A, guys. Plan B was that you were going to have a different plan A. You didn't. So B becomes A. It's his job. And the idea that we're hoping the 40-year-old can bend down and get a grounder seems like we're hitting a panic button awful early. I love that he's willing to do it and he's working on it. He reads the writing on the wall. He knows they're a good team. They're just going to need me to turn back the clock. I hear what you're saying, Dustin, about a game or two. I think he's not a legitimate candidate. He's more of a emergency get-out-of-a-game guy at this point in his career. And I don't mean that as an insult. I think he's a very willing and a good guy. But I'm just saying physically, I don't – how many times has he played third base in the last couple of years? It's like
not much
to nothing.
Not much.
Terrific question. Need to get that answered. Don't have it for you today.
Voice of Bruce Levine in his regular spring training spot of 825. What did you make of the White Sox young power lefties making their spring training debuts in a close 3-1 loss to the Padres? Which young star will get to the big leagues faster, Nola Schultz or Hagen Smith? The two have developed an easy friendship.
I thought it was great. I read Nola Schultz saying he only has sisters and, you know, he feels like he's got a brother in Hagen Smith because they're They're two young studs. They're 21 years old. They're probably, I think Smith might be the guy that's heading to the big leagues faster. But, you know, Noah Schultz, I read a story, I think it was by Merck, earlier in camp where they talked about they're kind of going to take off some of the training wheels. Like at this point in his career, he has not gone more than 65 pitches through the major leagues. You know, they're trying to be super careful with him because he's such a stud. And they're, you know, he's pitching like four innings. They're still kind of, they still have him on this kind of pitch count, and they're trying to make sure that this is the year where he's going to kind of, you know, he's it with the dash and then the Barons last year. I think maybe he moves up, maybe he doesn't, maybe he's back in Double A, but I think he's heading the right way, and he's a very exciting prospect and the highest prospect on the team. But I think that maybe the other guy, Hagen Smith, is closer to the big leagues. But I believe the plan is for the two of them to be up and running by 26, or that's the hope.
I hope these guys are working out together and are pitching at the same spot. You know, the Double A, the Triple A, you know, the High A, whatever it is. I hope they stay together to develop the friendship that they're already developing. And I'm not kidding. This might be part of why the billionaire Justin Ishby wants to buy this team. And guess what? Then all of a sudden, that story might make Sox fans even happier, because now maybe it's not just, okay, the Sox are going to try to develop these guys and then trade them because they'll never pay them once they get past the second contract. So this is actually really good news, and it's exciting. It's more exciting.
That's like, that is
because,
an excellent point.
Because you could feel, I'm just, as a fan, you could feel like we're seeing this development. These guys are special, and they might not actually leave or get traded.
See, that's a great point, because with Chris Sale, there was always a sense of inevitability that he was going to have to go. Carlos Rodon, same kind of thing as Dustin rolls his eyes. But when I watched Hagen Smith pitching yesterday, I thought of Carlos Rodon. There was some similarities there because they're both left-handed. They have similar type releases, and I think that he's a guy that you can get excited about, maybe because you're going to be able to keep him and pair him with Noah Schultz, who you might be able to also keep and pay and win with and because of. That was exciting yesterday. I like the idea of tethering them together throughout the minor leagues because of the relationship they have, and also the development paths that seem to be pretty clear for maybe 2026, maybe late 2025. Bruce seems to think that they are on that track and they could be up sooner rather than later. I did enjoy seeing them pitch both yesterday, one inning apiece. Hagen Smith, good old boy, seemed to like get off the truck, pick up and go and just start throwing hard. And he struck out three guys. That was fun. I also liked, we'll hear it later, but Brooke Fletcher interviewing Noah Schultz's dad as he recorded his first out. That was a lot of fun.
That was awesome.
Both questions are hard.
How much time did you spend with the Bulls last night? Did the result do much for you? Did anybody stand out to you?
The result was what it was. They lost, and I felt like that was a game they could have won. So I wasn't even a rooting interest. You just get conditioned to watching games. Like, oh, they can get here. Oh, you're disappointed when James Harden hit that big three, because that's what he always does. But there were things to like. Again, individual progress in the face of collective failure. And that's what we're looking for here. And when you see, I don't know what Zach Collins is to the Bulls. I'm not sure what he is. Is he a keeper? But he's making the most of his advantage of his opportunity. He's taking advantage of that because he's also auditioning for the other teams in the league as well. So you see little things. You see Giddey continue to have a double-double, and that was good. I don't know what they're going to do with him. A lot of guys whose names and games you're learning on the fly. Trey Jones, 10 points? Really? People probably didn't know he was part of this team, but he did have double figures in an NBA game in Chicago in a Bulls uniform. So, yeah, more of the same. Raptors here Friday night, ready or not.
Almost perfection. Almost perfection. I watched and listened. I was back and forth. I was driving around. Watched it, listened to it. Chuck and Bill did a great job, as they typically do here on The Score. If there was one problem one problem with the game. It was that Matas Buzelis went from playing 36 minutes to 26 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, wait, like, wouldn't you want him to play in front of the home crowd as opposed to the visiting crowd?
Gotta earn it.
5 points.
Gotta earn it.
He only had 5 points.
Didn't like that.
And he was a minus 18. So, from a plus-minus ratio, he was the worst of any Bull. So, that I did not like. That was the Zach Collins game. So, we found out who Zach Collins was last night. Perfection. Hashtag capture the flag.
I think that, yeah, Zach Collins had a great game for himself. I think it's just another example of Josh Giddey sort of filling the void that is left by Zach LaVine's departure. And this is a guy who has averaged 24 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists since the All-Star break. He's found this role. It's interesting to me because when I think about it, when Zach was injured, that's when Kobe sort of took over. And you saw the best of Kobe, and he became like a significantly better player. And now we see Zach depart, and it's Josh Giddey this year that seems to be filling the void of his absence and seems to be getting more shots. And it was good that he knocked down his threes. The problem with him is the turnovers, and he had 5 of them, and that's too many. But his all-around game has really come forward as you hit this crucial section for him where his contract expires. His contract runs out at the end of the year. They still control him, but they're going to have to figure out what decision they want to make.
How close are we to a Patrick Williams reevaluation in terms of his health? Are we coming up on the 2-week period? Because I think it's close.
I haven't thought about him since he was out. Isn't that awful?
Well, in the final 20 games or so, you'd like to, it's unrealistic, but you want guys to assume roles down the stretch that you think they could fill when you actually are good. Josh Giddey is a perfect example of that. You wonder how he would play when he isn't the primary ball handler and when he isn't maybe one of the top one or two options. So if he can continue that, if they ever got to the point where he wasn't that guy, well, he'd be worth keeping at a reasonable cost. I don't know about Patrick Williams either. Both have a lot of questions.
Okay.
A lot of questions.
Nothing but questions.
But Dustin's happy, though, so it's a perfection.
Perfect win.
Perfect win.
Because they lost.
Perfect win. Go
All
lift.
Right.